Yeah, we're going to talk about it. Welcome to Unemployed Negro, the podcast where real talk meets real life at the intersection of Blackness and the job market. This is a space for the stories we live but rarely hear. Stories of grind, resilience, burnout, breakthrough, and all the things that come with trying to build a career while being Black, and often being overlooked. I'm your host. My name, let's just say I'm one of many brothers who's been hired, fired, promoted, passed over, celebrated, and sometimes silenced, just trying to navigate systems that weren't built with us in mind. And if you've ever stared at your resume like it is your last lifeline, or walked into a job interview and felt like you had to shrink who you are to fit in, then yeah, this space is for you. But we're not just here to vent, we're here to build. Each episode will bring you stories from the block to the boardroom, from folks figuring it out to those who found their way. You'll hear from professionals, career coaches, and everyday people making moves, or trying to. Every week, I have the same dream. I've lost my job, bills pile up, I might lose my home. I can't support my family, I can't even support myself. With just a few missed paychecks, my entire way of life feels like it's slipping away. I feel less like myself, lost, worthless. It's a nightmare, but for too many Black men today, it's not just a dream, it's a reality. The job market is tightening, layoffs are real, and the pressure is heavy. So how do you cope when you lose a job or when you're stuck searching for one? In this week's episode of Unemployed Negro, we're talking about the fear that comes with job loss and how to face it head on. You'll hear from a licensed therapist who breaks down practical steps brothers can take to deal with the stress, the shame, and the struggle without losing themselves in the process. Let's get into it. All right, episode 2, Unemployed Negro. Going to reintroduce our recurring co-host, Crystal.
Hello, you sounded pretty somber there.
You know, I'm dealing with a lot. It's been a long road in unemployment so far, and I think it's time I start talking about it, or at least talk to someone about it. It's a lot.
It sounds like it's a very heavy load.
And I just can't help but think, you know, there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people out there, some who look just like me, who are also dealing with this. I was reading that roughly only 25% of Black and Hispanic men seek out medical help when dealing with anxiety and depression, compared to 45% of white men. I think it's time I talk to somebody.
Yeah, there's no need for you to cry in the dark.
I actually cry in the shower, like most self-respecting men. I think I'm going to talk to someone. I know a guy. He's a therapist, and he's agreed to talk to me about it. You know, I think it's going to be a one-on-one conversation. So maybe you can take a smoke break.
Okay, I see that you want some privacy right now. I will see myself out.
Yeah.
Wait, but I have a question. Can they listen?
You mean the audience? They're along this journey with me. They are me. They're going to get this therapy session too.
Well, tell me how it goes. I'll try not to listen at the door.
I don't know if I or we can do that, but
okay,
we'll give you top lines, maybe.
All right. Well, enjoy your couch.
Just make sure you close the door.
I'm going. I'm seeing myself out. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
But she never leave. Okay. Well, I guess it's just me and you. We're going to take a moment and start talking to our therapist. All right, well, let's get into it. So happy today to be joined by Merv, who has a background in mental health. Merv Brandy, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. My name's Merv Brandy, you know, hailing out of Charlotte, North Carolina. I am a therapist, particularly in a certain therapy style known as narrative therapy, which is something that's really dear to my heart. I'm very passionate about. I feel like it's really a gateway and a resource to helping a lot of people of color, and particularly Black men, kind of navigate different aspects of themselves and come into various realizations of who they are. Yeah, and I've been working in mental health, public health, and wellness for the last 12 years, you know, and I'm currently in private practice again in Charlotte. So I'm really happy to be here and have this conversation with you.
Tell us a little bit more about your clientele and who do you usually see and what trends have you seen lately as so much is changing in the job market for people who look like us?
I see majority Black and brown men. So 95% of my clients are men ranging from ages 9 to close to 70. So I see a plethora of brothers throughout the Charlotte, Mecklenburg County area, and even other parts of North Carolina as well. When you kind of talk about some of the trends that I'm seeing a lot of areas where the challenges of maintaining, sustaining, or understanding where Black men fit in terms of the job market has been a challenge. So really trying to support a lot of my clients around just how to navigate anxiety and depression around job placement, around promotion, right? Around really trying to figure out what it is that they feel like they want to do with themselves as it relates to career, right? So a lot of counseling around career, as well as some other aspects around vulnerability, childhood trauma, and just navigating relationship.
Wow, you cover the gamut, sir. And I'm sure your books are quite full because for those of you who don't know, finding a man of color, specifically a Black man who is a therapist or counselor, is extremely challenging because quite some time have been looking for one, and I had no shade. I had to settle for like, and when we talk about race, his eyes kind of just glaze over, and I just have to like, you know, cut off some slack when I talk about, you know, the intersections of race and my employment.
Well, you know, what's interesting is we, as Black male therapists, counselors, we represent really less than 1% of that profession. So trying to find a Black dude who is in the field can sometimes be challenging, but I always tell people to not give up, right? To lean on some of the Black women who are also in the practice. They tend to be connected to Black men doing the work. And, you know, at the very least, I still recommend folks maybe working with people who may not identify if there's a way that they can help you navigate through various challenges. But I would definitely recommend people not to kind of quit that journey.
First of all, finding a therapist in no matter the color, when I was in my late 20s, my mother had passed, and I remember I was looking for a therapist, and I had a 1 week of bereavement leave.
Wow.
That's all they give you. At least that's all they gave you back then. I don't think it's changed much different, but
Wow. Yeah,
and I was working at that time, I believe I was working with the Washington Post Company, and they were cool, but I had a week of bereavement, and they said, if you want to keep your job, you know, or not, let us know. And so I had a week to find a therapist, and everybody I called was booked. I wasn't even looking necessarily for a Black male therapist. I was like, will anyone take me? And everybody was like, I'm booked.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole region having a mental health crisis, like, but it's a rough road. And I'm sure you have a lot of stories in terms of you just as in your profession as a Black male, but giving props to you for just doing this, because this is so needed. And I think that when we think about our jobs, our employment, our livelihood, that is a major stress point for people in their lives. You have things happening in your personal life that may be not related to your job. But when I talk to people, some of the biggest stress they speak about is often work related. So where we're at as a country right now, we have a new administration that's in, it's about Trump administration, and Black people are feeling the impact of what has been happening, policies that are anti-DEI, anti-inclusive hiring. Number of us across both genders have lost their jobs. And, you know, how can you not be stressed, panicked, or, you know, doing a nosedive when you have either lost your job or you fear that you may lose your job? I have friends of mine that work in federal government and they're on eggshells.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're going to be able to keep their job. So how do people of color, specifically men of color, traditionally deal with work-related stress? Because I don't know if it's something that we run to a therapist or a counselor to talk about. I think that's something that we just learn to shoulder ourselves, and maybe not in the best way. But what realistically happens in these situations?
I think now Black men in particular are becoming more comfortable with having those conversations with therapists and counselors, right? And seeing it in the lens of how it's truly impacting their overall emotional wellness, right? And so, you know, this is a culmination of my personal experience, empirical experiences from friends, from colleagues, from clients, right? And I think there's definitely a level of uncertainty, especially for folks who may be connected to government, federal jobs, even private sector, right? There's always a level of uncertainty, but I think really trying to understand kind of the lay of the land around you is going to be important. When I talk to clients around this issue in particular, I try to be honest with them about acceptance, right? Like, so there's a treatment, a therapy style known as acceptance and commitment therapy. So that's important because in life, when you're dealing with systems, when you're dealing with, kind of various ways of navigating a system that you can't control, you know, trying to attempt to control something that's outside of your control is going to create a lot of emotional imbalance for you. Right. So it's more important to really focus on how do you accept the fact that this is happening, right? These changes may or may not affect you, right? And being honest with yourself about, you know, if you do have to pivot, right? Being okay with that.
And what does pivoting look like in a situation? You know, I've been an unemployed Negro, it's the name. And, you know, you feel a sense of whether you have left your job, you've been terminated from your job, or going through the process of finding a job. There is a sense that, you know, there's a sense of rejection. No one wants me. No one's hiring me. No, you know, so in a time like this where we have such a competitive labor market and everyone's looking for a job, I talk to recruiters and, you know, one job within a few days gets over 400 applicants.
Yeah.
So knowing that you are without a job and or looking for a job, knowing that the odds may not be in your favor. I was reading one article that said getting a job in this current market is like winning the lottery. So when you hear something like that, how do you cope with, again, the rejection that comes from transitioning from a job or the rejection that comes from looking for a job?
And so one area when we talk about pivoting, a part of that is understanding that the best way to navigate this is not necessarily to become too comfortable, right? The reality is to think about, you know, pursuing employment is something that you essentially have to do, but understanding that, you know, the rug can be pulled from up under you at any point. Right. Realistically, and that's for all of us in one way or another. It looks different, right? The way in which the rug is pulled from under you looks different for each person, but it's a reality. So to accept that is interesting, right? That in itself is a process to get to a place where the idea of being settled in employment, which creates security and sustainability, is not always going to be there. But when you accept the possibility for change, it allows you to navigate that change more effortlessly. And that's what we want to go for.
So what does that even look like for the average, I want to say average Joe, but let's say the Jaquan. What does that look like for the average, Jaquan? Does that mean, you know, be comfortable knowing that your livelihood could be yanked from under you at any point? Or does it mean keep your eyes open for any and all employment that may come your way, keep your options open? So what does that look like for people on the, you know?
That's exactly it. That's, you know, because employment and jobs are part of a larger system, right? Systems are forever changing. And so folks who are part of those systems should always be changing too, right? So the idea to evolve as you grow is necessary and it's useful and beneficial. I think younger generations, right, probably us older millennials and down, began to really maybe understand this differently, where folks have been kind of pivoting from job to job within 2 to 5 years, right? And understanding that not only pivoting from job to job is important, but being open to other types of jobs, right? Like other fields that you could bring value to. Outside of that, right? Thinking about when you think of your skill set, right? Where else can your skill set be useful outside of the types of jobs that you have, right? A person who works in, you know, sales in a management position could also maybe do some other things too in some other areas and other fields just based on the type of skill set that they have, right? So it's like venturing outside of the idea of, you know, the type of job that you typically and commonly would have to think about what are some other things that I could do with this, these skill sets that I had, you know, that allows you to have your options open. That allows you to think about yourself more as a brand and less as an employee or just a worker or a professional even, right? You're branding yourself and you're pivoting based on what your brand can bring to that larger system, which is the workforce system.
And being less rigid about how you see yourself, how you position yourself in the larger workforce and your career.
Right. Yeah, yeah. The other part I want to add to that too is knowing what the rules are, right? So it's important to know what the rules are. When I say knowing what the rules are, and this is something I've talked to clients about too, when we begin to accept, right? So with acceptance and commitment therapy, accepting what the system looks like and committing to engaging with the system differently, a part of that is knowing what the rules are, understanding what the rules are. And what I mean by that is not just what the policies are around where you work, right? And those types of things, but understanding, you know, what does opportunity look like for Black men where I work, right? Mm-hmm. What types of hurdles and challenges and obstacles am I going to have to face? How different does that look in the field that I'm a part of, right? How quickly is it ever evolving? How sustainable is it? Understanding the rules from this kind of larger cultural but also sociological perspective, right? Getting a sense of what are the rules in terms of what I'm seeing the landscape be for the type of work that I do, right?
I always try to speak in dollars and cents.
Okay.
For everyone, but what does this look like? You know, I just lost my job. I have a family, 2 kids. I have a mortgage to pay. You know, there's very practical things to do with that, in that position when you have a family support and bills to pay. But how do I check myself, check in on my health, my well-being, to have the mental fortitude to navigate this space where, you know, expenses are coming in, sometimes unforeseen expenses? How should I approach that from an escape so I don't jump out the window?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's, you know, assessing your environment. So assessing what you have, right? Understanding that if you just lost your job or you're dealing with your job, it might be in your best interest to think about how you can live below your means until you're able to find something that you feel like is lucrative enough for you to be back to where you want to be financially. So how can you begin to think about, you know, where are some areas where I could trim the fat realistically, right? And kind of still exist between myself and my family, and accepting what that looks like as well, because that's where some of that emotional stress, and those are typically where guys become triggered. A lot of guys find value in what they can provide. And so when we start thinking about the fact that some guys aren't able to provide in the same sense, that in itself can create a lot of emotional triggers. So how can we begin to accept the fact that I'm not going to be able to provide like I normally do in this season in the way I want to, but because I'm a part of an ever-changing system, I know that I can jump back into this and I know that I can get back to where I want and even more of what I want. But that's kind of accepting that. So being okay with the fact that you may have to live below your means, having healthy communications with family members. So if you have a partner or a spouse, if you have children, you know, figuring out how to be more honest and open around the communication with that. One thing I've seen with a lot of clients is, you know, a lot of guys don't like to express when they're having a hard time, right? So guys begin to go into this whole thing of not sharing the fact that they're struggling, not sharing that they had to cut back, you know?
You know, not telling their significant other they lost their job. I have a friend of mine who lost his job. Yeah. And for weeks, perhaps months, did not tell his wife that he had lost his job. That means he woke up every day, put on a suit, left the house, faked like he was going to his office, was going nowhere. What a charade to put on. But I think that hits a really valid point for men. So much of our value and so much value society puts on men is our ability to provide, our ability to make a earning. And when you don't have that or you're struggling with that, you're left to ask yourself, who are you? Who am I? What good am I? What value do I bring? Whether I'm a single man or if I have a spouse and children to support, that is a mental whiplash, in my opinion, to navigate.
Yeah. And this is why I love narrative therapy in particular, because it helps everyone begin to examine who they are and what value they bring to their lives outside of various aspects of their lives, like career, right? Which does hold value and is important, right? Because you want to provide. But even outside of that, who are you, you know?
Well, is it like telling them, you know, you is kind, you is smart? Like, do they have to do affirmations in the mirror? I look in the mirror and say, you can do this, damn it. You know?
It might be some of that. Like, affirmations to me really work, right? If you believe it and you don't think it's just some whatever, if you buy into it, it can help you. But it's also kind of going back to who you were as a young boy and thinking about where you find purpose and passion and creativity. And in that, you find a sense of identity and what drives you, which I think is really important, because career is great. There's some guys who are really connected to their careers and they find purpose and passion, but there's some guys who are working their careers because they might feel like, this is what I have to do. I have to provide, right? This brings value to who I am and my identity. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what happens when that rug is pulled from up under you? Then you begin to really question all of who you are. And that's what we don't want. We want guys to be able to really rely on who they are beyond just a job. And I know for some people, it's like, well, just a job. Some guys have really amazing, lucrative, successful careers. But at the end of the day, it's just a job, you know, and we have to remember that. And we have to be okay with having these larger conversations in therapy, I think, right, over time, really examining more of who you are, you know, and what you want from life and what you feel like you can bring and to your own life outside of just providing for yourself and for others. You know, I think that's really important. So it's not just kind of this one size fits all kind of way of explaining what that narrative therapy aspect looks like. There's a lot to it, but it first starts with reshaping the story that doesn't center around providing, even though that's a larger context that shapes the story within our society in terms of how I'm often seen.
It's so interesting because as men, we don't get to talk about these things, that how society lets us sees us in a way that may not always be healthy, and how much our self-worth is at the end of the day, dollars and cents. How much are you making? You know, I remember a female friend of mine years ago, she was dating a guy and he either lost his job or when he met her, she was he was unemployed and he was not in a position to engage her until he got a job. And then when he got a job, he called her up and asked her out and said, oh, I have a job now. So was his worth or value to her was the fact whether or not he had a job. Now, we all know, black women, you know, you don't want no bums, you don't want no scrubs, you don't want no broke dude.
Keeping it real, yeah.
But, you know, there's a difference between a broke dude and somebody who's just down and out.
Yeah.
Her. Do we see, I mean, us as men, do we see that? I remember I was on Martin Luther King Boulevard or Malcolm X Boulevard. I don't remember which one, but we knew it was black.
Okay, MO.
I went through there during a period of unemployment and I saw like a bunch of black men just on the streets in a park, Some of them looked unhoused. Some of them didn't look like they were on the up and up.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, in this moment, what is the difference between me and them? We're both unemployed, but potentially. I'm just a few paychecks away from potentially being out sitting in a park in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
With nowhere to be or nowhere to go. And I think so often that is what the energy we get. You know, if you're on social media right now, you hear all these commentary about from women about not wanting some broke dude. He has to be provide this, this, and this, and this. I think that has an internalized impact on men, not just from just the greater society, but from the opposite sex and gender, on what they, you have to be this, this, and that. And if you're not that, what value do you have? And when you're facing some job insecurity or some income insecurity, how do you reconcile?
I think even with the dollars and cents piece, being able to provide financially in terms of paper and coins, there's another piece to this too when it comes to Black men. How do you find ambition for things outside of what brings you paper and coins? Because a lot of times we, to your point, we buy into the narrative that's been created upon us, which, you know, nobody wants to be broke. I think, you know, most people want to live comfortably and want to be able to provide for themselves. And so that is very important. But at the same time, you know, do you deal with being ambitious about the things that you want? How are you going after the things that you want, even in the face of adversity? And so adversity looks like losing a job. What's your bounce back game like?
Yeah.
You know, how do you really bounce back from that? Those are the things that are always going to be able to help you navigate any type of situation or system you're in. It's believing that regardless of what I go through, how much I lose, you know, how much I'm rejected, you know, when I'm faced with, I can always figure out a way to kind of get myself back to where I need to be. And that's the mindset that I think is important for us collectively if we really kind of want to go beyond how we kind of navigate this issue. And that's one thing that I strive to discuss and talk to my clients about.
Mr. Brandy, thank you so much for this conversation. Again, Merv Brandy, counselor, therapist based in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Look him up. He specializes in helping men of color through life. He's a rare find indeed. I had to search far and wide to find the Brandy. But at any point, thank you for joining us.
We'll be back with Crystal to close out the show. Want to hear your story featured on Unemployed Negro? Email us at info@unemployednegro.com. info@unemployednegro.com. Show your support. Join our Kickstarter campaign to fund future episodes at kickstarter.com/profile/unemployed Negro. Your voice matters. Let's build together.
Okay, wow. Mr. Brandy was helpful. Definitely gave me some things to think about in terms of how I see myself in this situation. I think I can get through this.
Even your voice sounds a little bit lighter. What did you guys talk about, if I may ask?
Are you going to fake like you weren't eavesdropping?
I may have overheard just a little, but not too much, you know.
You know,
not too much.
I think he said a lot of interesting things. Just even the data behind men of color in mental health professions. I think he said something like 1%. Ooh, it is hard. It's hard to find us there.
It's very hard. I had trouble finding a therapist, so I can only imagine.
And I think it's even more important now for someone like me who's going through a period of unemployment where you're just kind of staring at your computer waiting for emails to say you have an interview. You know, that's a lot to deal with. After the call, he did say there are resources out there for individuals going through this, whether you're employed or unemployed. He said EAP counselor, which is usually services through the HR department at one's job. It offers mental health services. If you're employed.
If you're not employed, what do you do?
If you're not employed, he said you can apply to Medicaid in your state. Mm-hmm. If you are approved, there are a lot of mental health professionals that will accept Medicaid. And if you ain't with that Medicaid or your state isn't with that Medicaid, so you can go to a church, community organizations that may have a counselor on staff to assist
public people. Groups. I know there's, you know, you have different recovery options out there to talk through your options.
Indeed. And he also said, you know, there's some underground groups on social media that may offer resources or support Black men or people in need of mental health services. Yeah. So
there are options out there to assist. But nevertheless, I think it was a really encouraging conversation in terms of how I think about myself, not only as a man, but a man of color. What is my value? What is my worth? And what my job brings to my life? And realizing that, you know, at the end of the day, it shouldn't always define me.
No, there are other parts of your identity that your profession or your employment status should not supersede. You should, being primarily identified by your profession or what you do for work almost kind of sets you up for failure if you are not able to work or lose that profession or just for whatever reason may be incapacitated and not able to work in that way.
It also makes me think, you know, work is important, but it's not the only thing that is important in one's mm-hmm. life. And it's not the only thing that should define me. Of course, having that check is wonderful, particularly if it's a fat check, a nice check, a consistent check.
Being clothed and housed and fed
is
quite motivating.
It is quite motivating. What's the quote, work to live versus live to work? Maybe yes. That is yes. Some insight one should have in this situation. But nevertheless, insightful conversation. I'm going to be holding some things we discussed and applying it to what I'm currently going through. And hopefully wherever I go next, that I see myself, like he said, as a part of a changing system rather than a tree with roots.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that I did overhear just a bit.
No.
It's a little portion of what I overheard was just how generationally this can affect. One, millennials and younger may be more used to hopping jobs every 3 to 5 years. That does help you to keep who your employer is in relationship or relationship to you and your identity. Sometimes it's easier to think because this is a paycheck. And while everyone definitely wants a satisfying career that they love and they are quote unquote passionate about, sometimes I think mentally it is a job, maybe a helpful perspective. This is work. Hopefully I enjoy it and hopefully I don't detest it.
Well, I'm going to look at my job as like a car lease moving forward. So every 2 to 5 years, I'm trading in for something better.
I mean,
before I get traded in or out.
You depreciate in value the minute you drop off the lot. But we're not cars. We're humans. You know, we're people. We're not machines. And that's what I think that overarchingly, thinking through your career, even before you enter it, that it is just putting it in the proper perspective in your life helps when you are without it.
Yeah. And also think, like I said a moment ago, knowing that there's an expiration date that mm-hmm. comes with everything. Everybody has an expiration. Relationships have an expiration date. Milk has an expiration date. Everything in between has.
But there is a best buy date, which means there is. We got to balance the realism with some level of hopefulness. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you're hitting your stride at a job, those same character traits and abilities and skills and intrinsic things that you have that can serve you somewhere else. Like these things are transferable. They're not just applied at that job. And your best buy date never really comes. You can always move to shift to new heights, new levels, you know, improve. That's not anything that's going to peak. I don't think so.
I think I've had a best buy date at several jobs where it's probably mm-hmm. after the first year into the second year where it's like, mm-hmm. I am at my peak. I'm at my zenith. You know, I am the man on the mountain. So realizing your best buy date is great.
It's interesting in how, as someone who is an experienced professional, how I tend to think about my work at this point. It's a job, and I'm not miserable, but it is a job. I used to, when I was in my early career, I used to look at some of the older women with children and a family at my job and think like, oh, they're dinosaurs. They're just going to stick here and stay here forever. Like, I'm going to move on. But at this point in my career as someone who is, it's nearly 20 years in themselves, I think to myself, I understand what decisions they were making. I understand that stability, security, knowing your job, you know it in and out, it's familiar. That's worth something too. And I think that the ability to be realistic about what your expectations are towards your work if you're ever out of work, it just sets a mindset of realism. This is who I am. These are the skills I have. This is the things I can do. I can do this as a volunteer in an organization. I can still keep myself professionally upskilled, professionally ready. May not be at the job I was at, but I can still sustain these things that I know I can do well and even stretch into things that I can do differently.
Well, like you said, the dinosaurs, it does get tiring being on the run every few years from a job.
And praying that meteor don't strike it.
Yeah, it's like...
Signal your extinction.
I've been on the run sometimes, and it definitely can get... I'm tired.
I mean, Donnie.
It's like the feds are chasing you or something. You got to duck in somewhere.
Well, those dinosaurs may... extinct.
I can appreciate a good sit for a few years. I definitely don't mind sitting for a few years moving forward in the future as I age. So I don't know if I can keep this up into my 50s, 60s, et cetera, and beyond. So maybe at one point I will lay down roots and become a dinosaur like some of the folks you've experienced earlier in career. But
that's quite a luxury to be able to do that.
It is a luxury to become a dinosaur or a tree. Anywho, great conversation. We're out of time. I think next conversation, Crystal, you're going to find particularly interesting.
Oh, how so?
We're going to be talking about 300,000.
The 300, the movie?
No. Oh. 300,000 Black women who have lost their jobs in 2025.
Yeah.
It's something.
Then serious. I'll get my own therapy session, I guess.
You're going to need to, because it ain't nothing nice. It ain't nothing nice.
Let me pull out my... back book and researching, because that is quite disappointing.
Yes, it is. But we're going to break it down. We're going to talk about it anyway. Closing out the episode. Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you.
Thank you, therapist Merv. And thank you, audience, for listening. We're out. We'll be talking next week again. 300,000. Stay tuned.
All right. See you guys next time.
This episode was written and produced by the team at Unemployed Negro. Voices featured in this episode shared their own experiences navigating the intersection of Blackness and the workforce. Audio production by A. Thapa. Music by Noel, The Weeknd, and Strange Love. Additional music, Baines, Butterfly, Kimora, by 1000 Hands. Music licensed through Epidemic Sound, Free Music Archive, and Pixabay. Special thanks to Merv Brandy, Crystal, and the host. For advertising inquiries, contact info@hivemindfirm.com. If you're looking to reach a dynamic, engaged audience of Black professionals and changemakers, we'd love to work with you. Follow, subscribe, and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, this isn't just a show. It's a space, a story, and a statement.